The street was dimly illuminated by squares of yellow light that spilled through the doors and windows of the buildings. High above the little town, stars winked brightly, while over a distant mesa, the moon hung like a large silver wheel.
What do you say we get a drink?
Not till we get these women took care of.
You mean took care of? Took care of how?
I mean find some place to keep them.
You got some place in mind?
Yeah.
Where?
We're gonna put them in jail.
Jail? You kidding me?
I told you, my brother is the marshal here.
Kino rode up alongside Sally, then leaned over. Although the red could not be seen in the moonlight, his face did shine from the smear of lard.
Well now, how about that, Miss High and Mighty Sally Jensen? I'll just bet you ain't never been in no jail before, now have you?
Sally didn't answer.
Van Arnt, I know you said your brother was the marshal here. Now maybe he will go along with putting these here women in jail. But what about the rest of the folks in town? How are they going to take it?
When they learn these two women are a couple of whores who tried to steal from us, why, they'll take it just fine.
Whores? You aren't going to say that we're whores. No, please. I couldn't stand the shame of such a thing.
You are really something, you know that. If things don't go the way they're supposed to, both you women is going to be killed. And all you're worried about is whether or not you're going to be called a whore.
They reined up in front of a small adobe building. A board was attached to the front of the building, on which the word jail had been crudely painted. A dim light flickered from inside. Van Arnt dismounted, then looked at the others. Not one of the others had dismounted.
Come on. Get down.
Van Arnt, I tell you the truth. I ain't all that happy about walking into a jailhouse on my own.
I told you there ain't nothing to worry about. Get down. As soon as we get the women took care of, we'll go get us something to drink.
Hell, I don't know about you boys. That sounds good to me.
The men tied off the horses, then went into the jail. At first, they didn't see anyone.
Damn. Is the place empty?
Nah, there he is.
Van Arnt pointed to the back of the room. There, someone was sitting in a chair that was tipped back against the wall. His hat was pulled down over his eyes, and his feet were up on the desk.
Is that your brother?
Nah, he must be the deputy. Hey, deputy! Deputy, wake up!
Startled, the deputy jumped. Then he raised his hat and opened his eyes in surprise.
Who the hell are you?
Where's the marshal?
Oh, more than likely, he's down at the saloon. Who are you?
You got a key to the jail?
Yeah, it's over there.
Good. I want these two whores locked up for stealing.
Van Arnt walked over toward the key ring.
What? I can't do that.
Why not?
Well, on account of because this here jail's only got one cell, and there's a prisoner in it already. I can't put women in there with a man prisoner.
Hell, that's not a problem.
Van Arnt took the key down from the hook, then opened the cell door.
Hey! You prisoner. You're a free man. Get out.
What the hell are you doing? You can't do that. This man is a burglar. We're waiting on a visit from the circuit judge.
I just found him not guilty. Hey, you.
What's going on? Who are you?
I'm the judge, and I just found you not guilty. You're a free man. Get out of here now.
Yes, sir.
The prisoner grabbed his hat, and he stepped out of the cell. He stopped when he saw the two bound women.
Who's this?
It don't matter none to you who it is. Get out now.
I'm going.
What's your name, deputy?
Laney. Jerry Laney.
Well, Laney, it's like I said, you don't have a problem. Now get these two whores in that cell.
Oh, help us, please. We are whores and we didn't steal anything. These men have taken us prisoner. They're holding us for ransom.
What? And what is she talking about?
How long have you been a deputy?
About 2 years.
You ever put anyone in jail who didn't say they was innocent?
No, I don't reckon I have. But then I ain't never put no women in jail before.
A woman ain't no different from a man. Catch them in the act and they'll lie about it same as a man will.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just, I'm not all that sure about this.
I tell you what. If you don't feel right about it, just go ahead and lock him up now, then come on down to the saloon with us. You can talk to my brother about it.
Talk to your brother about it? What does he have to do with anything?
He has everything to do with it. My brother is the marshal of this town.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so in the first place? All right, let's go down and talk to him.
You're making a mistake, Deputy Laney. A big mistake. My name is Sally Jensen. My husband's name is Smoke Jensen. These men have kidnapped us and are holding us for ransom. If you go along with them, you will be guilty of collusion.
Guilty of what?
Collusion. It means you are just as guilty as they are.
What? Hey, look here. I didn't kidnap you.
If you help these men now, then it will be the same as if you did.
Oh, look. Miss, I'll talk to the marshal about it. I'm just a deputy here.
Good idea.
You will at least untie us now, won't you?
Untie him, Kino.
Kino untied Lucy first, taking his time with it and allowing his hands to move all across her body as he did so.
Honey, you just wait. Before all this is over, I'm gonna show you what a real man can do.
When he finished with Lucy, he turned to Sally.
It's your turn, Sally. You don't mind if I call you Sally, do you?
Call me whatever you want. Your days are numbered.
Ha! We'll just see about that.
He reached for Sally, but stopped when he saw her remove the rope herself and hand it to him.
What the? How'd you do that? Van Art, you see what she just done?
Get them in the cell and let's go.
But did you see what she did? She got herself untied. You been untied all along?
What difference does it make whether she was or wasn't? She's here, ain't she? Now get them both in the cell like I told you to.
All right, get in there.
Deputy, you seen what a slippery bitch she is, so make damn sure the cell door is locked.
Yeah, I will. It's locked.
Not trusting him, Van Arndt walked over to the cell door and tried to open it. When he was satisfied that it was securely locked, he turned to the others.
It's always good to double check. What do you say we go have that drink now? You ladies don't get into trouble while we're gone.
Oh, Sally, what's going to happen to us? I'm so frightened.
It will be all right. Just keep your courage up.
I can't feel my hands. I can't even feel my arms.
That's because the rope cut off your circulation. Don't worry about it. The circulation will come back. Here, sit on the bed. Let me see what I can do to help it.
Lucy sat on the bed and Sally began rubbing on her arms. Lucy was quiet for a long moment before she spoke.
He was right, wasn't he?
Who was right about what?
Van Arndt was right. He said bringing me along would keep you from escaping. You got free from the ropes. That means you could have escaped if it hadn't been for me.
Nonsense. Just because I got free from the ropes doesn't mean I could have escaped.
But you could escape if it weren't for me, couldn't you? I'm holding you back.
No, you aren't. Believe me, honey, if I see the opportunity to escape, I'm going to do it. And when I do, I'm going to take you with me.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I could do anything like that.
Sure you can. Most people have a lot more strength and courage than they realize.
Sally, are you afraid?
Yes, of course I am. One would be a fool not to be afraid.
Thanks.
Thanks? Are you thanking me for being afraid?
Yes. Somehow, I don't know why, but somehow knowing that you're afraid too helps.
When Van Arndt and the others went into the saloon, Van Arndt looked around the room for a moment. At this time of night, the saloon was filled with customers, most of whom were rough-looking characters. Many, Van Arndt knew, were on the wrong side of the law, and they came to Salcedo because they were able to work out an arrangement with the marshal. The women who worked the bar were from the very lowest strata of whores and bar girls. Their looks and health had been so ruined by the dissipation and diseases of their trade that a place like this was absolutely the last rung on the ladder for them. Van Arndt saw the man he was looking for sitting at a table in the back of the room, drinking a beer.
There's my brother over there. You three go up to the bar and have a drink. I think the deputy and I need to talk to him for a few minutes.
Kino, Jeter, and Boswell stepped up to the bar.
Can you imagine Van Arndt having a brother who's the law?
He ain't his full brother.
He ain't?
Nope. They got the same mama, but they don't have the same papa. The marshal's name is Craig. Don't many people know that Van Arndt is his brother. I reckon if folks knew that, it could cause him some trouble.
I'll be damned. I hope they get along all right.
They get along fine.
You met him, have you?
Yeah, a few times.
What about the deputy? You ever met him before?
No, I ain't never met the deputy.
He might give us some trouble.
Why do you say that?
I just got that feeling is all. I mean, look at him over there. Looks like he's giving the marshal an earful.
I wonder what they're talking about.
Now, I don't feel right about this, Marshal. The woman says she is Smoke Jensen's wife, and she says she's been kidnapped and is being held for ransom.
Are you crazy, Reese? Putting Smoke Jensen's wife in my jail?
Who said she's Jensen's wife?
She says she's Smoke Jensen's wife.
I told you, Deputy, they ain't nothing but just a couple of whores that tried to steal from us. She just told you she was Jensen's wife. I can't believe that you believed her.
Is that true?
Yeah, they're whores. Look, Laney, why don't you step up to the bar and have a drink with them boys while me and my brother talk? We got some business to discuss. Family business.
The deputy looked at Craig.
Marshal?
Go ahead, Jerry. If it's family business, my brother and me need to talk in private for a few minutes.
All right. But I'll be just over there if you need me.
When the deputy stepped up to the bar beside the others, Kino looked down toward the bartender.
Bring us another glass for the deputy. You might as well get acquainted with a friendly conversation.
I'm all for friendly conversation, but if it's all the same to you, I'll have a beer.
The barkeep nodded, but said nothing. He drew a mug of beer from the barrel, then set the foaming liquid in front of the deputy.
What are they talking about?
I don't have the slightest idea what they're talking about. They said they had some family business to talk about, and then they sent me away. Hey, I want to ask you boys a question.
What's that?
Now, the women you brought in, is one of them really Smoke Jensen's wife?
Yeah, she's Jensen's wife. Can you imagine that? Jensen's wife in jail?
Oh, son of a bitch, this is bad. Oh, this is really bad.
Have you lost your mind? What in the hell are you doing with her? And why did you bring her into my town and my jail? Do you really expect Smoke Jensen to pay a ransom for her?
I'm not actually holding her for ransom. I mean, that's what I thought I was gonna do when I took her. But the more I thought about it, the more I knew it wasn't gonna work out. That's when I come up with the other plan.
What other plan?
I'm using Jensen's wife as bait.
What?
You know what bait is, don't you? You use bait to set a trap. Well, sir, that's what I've done. I've set a trap for Jensen. Once he finds out I've got his wife, he'll come for her.
Oh, he'll come for her, all right. That is, if he knows you have her.
Well, he knows. I sent Peters to tell him that we're holding her for ransom.
How do you react to that?
Well, most likely Jensen killed Peters.
What the hell, Reese? Have you gone plumb loco? You're doing all this just to kill Jensen?
Yeah, but there's more to it than just killing him. There's also the money part.
What money? And how much money are you talking about?
Oh, I'd say about $125,000.
What? Did you say $125,000?
Yeah, at least that much.
All right, well, you've gotten my attention. Go on with your story.
Jensen has one of the biggest ranches in the entire state. With him, his wife, and his two hands dead, there'll be no one left behind at the ranch. I plan to move in and take over.
Don't be foolish. You can't steal a ranch.
No, but we can cut out about 5,000 head from his herd.
You are absolutely loco. You're just gonna steal 5,000 head of cattle, are you? And what do you want to do with them?
It's after spring roundup. More than likely, there are 10 or 15 big herds being moved. Maybe more. One more big herd ain't gonna rouse no suspicion at all. We'll drive them up to Harney in Wyoming and sell them there. They're paying $25 a head. 5,000 head and $25 a head. You figure it out for yourself.
That is a lot of money. But how are you going to get the cattle in the first place?
Yes, 30,000 head wandering all over 15,000 acres of grassland. With Jensen, his wife, and his two hands gone, there won't be nobody left at the ranch but a few old Mexicans, and they'll all be so confused by everything that they won't know whether to pick their nose or scratch their ass. I'm telling you, there won't be anyone left to keep an eye on things at Sugarloaf. We'll have the cattle gone and sold before anyone misses them.
Yeah. Well, there is just one little problem with your whole idea.
What is that?
Smoke Jensen is a well-known man in these parts. Killing him is going to put every lawman between Canada and Mexico on the hunt.
No. There won't be anyone looking for us.
How do you figure that?
At one time, Jensen was a wanted man, and the whole state was plastered with wanted posters for him. Dead or alive. Am I right or wrong?
You're right. But all those Dodgers were pulled back a long time ago.
Say there was somebody, a bounty hunter, say, who come across one of those wanted posters and didn't know that they'd been pulled back. And suppose that bounty hunter killed Jensen and the other members of his gang. Would that be murder? Or would that just be an awful mistake?
Well, things like that have happened before. I recollect a feller by the name of Flatnose Parker was shot and killed by a bounty hunter after Parker already be tried and found innocent. The bounty hunter wouldn't charge because the thing is, you can't always be sure there ain't no reward posters left out there.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was thinking. Do you have any old Dodgers with Smoke Jensen's name on them?
Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do.
Then who's to say that killing him isn't an honest mistake by someone who didn't know the paper had all been pulled?
Maybe.
It's damn more than maybe, and you know it. You know the idea will work, don't you?
Yeah, just my work at that. By the way, Jerry said you had two women in the jail. Who's the other one?
Her name's Lucy Goodnature. She's a daughter of Jensen's neighbor.
What do you have her for? That's just gonna make things more complicated.
I hadn't planned on taking her. It just so happened that she was over at Smoke Jensen's ranch visiting when we showed up. I didn't have no choice but to take her. But it's worked out real good.
How so?
As long as we have her, Jensen's wife ain't gonna try and escape.
Yeah, I see your point. Half.
Half? Half of what? What are you talking about?
I want half the money.
The hell makes you think I'm gonna give you half the money?
You'll give me half the money, or you'll take the women somewhere else.
Now that ain't no way fair, Harlan, and you know it. I mean, yeah, I'm counting on your help, and I was planning on cutting you in on some of the money. What the hell kind of way is that to treat your own brother to ask for half like that?
I'm your half-brother. When you think about it, it seems only right to give half the money to your half-brother.
We may be only half-brothers, but we have the same mama.
Half the money.
I'm the one that took all the risks.
What the hell are you talking about? There ain't been no risk took at all yet. The real risk don't start until Jensen catches up with you. Then you're gonna need me. Half the money.
All right, half. But you damn sure better be there when I need you.
I'll be there.
Deputy Laney looked over at the table where Van Arnt and Craig were still engaged in conversation.
Van Arnt told me that the woman was lying, that she wasn't Jensen's wife. Now, why would he tell me that?
Maybe he figured it was none of your business.
I'm the one who put the women in jail. That makes it my business.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it.
Well, why do you have them? What are you going to do with them?
I'll tell you what I'd like to do with the young one.
What do you mean, the young one? Jensen's wife is just as good looking. Hell, she might even be better looking.
Yeah, but she's too damn feisty. Messing around with her would be like tangling with a mountain lion. No, sir. The young one for me.
This here whiskey is making me sick. I'm going out back to puke.
Some man you are.
Kino waved him off, then stumbled toward the back door.
What the hell is wrong with Kino?
Don't worry none about him. I reckon he's woke up in a puddle of his own puke more than once. Besides, with him gone, there's more whiskey for us.
You got that right.
Again, Jeter offered whiskey to the deputy, and again the deputy declined, preferring beer instead. The deputy continued to keep his eye on the table where Marshal Craig and the strange-looking, very white man who was his brother were talking.
I wonder just what the hell they are talking about.
Knowing Van Arnt, he's done got his little brother twisted around his finger by now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
You're a funny one, you know that.
As soon as Kino reached the alley behind the saloon, he looked back toward the door to make sure that no one was following him. When he was certain he was alone, he smiled broadly and started quickly up the alley toward the jail. The whiskey had not really made him sick. He'd merely used that as an excuse to get away from the others so he could do what he planned to do. When Kino reached the jail, he stepped inside and looked back toward the single cell. The two women were sitting on the same bed, talking quietly. They looked up when Kino came into the room.
Kino, where are the others?
Don't matter none where the others are. I don't need them to take care of my business.
To take care of your business? What business would that be?
Tell you what, Sally. Whatever my business is, it ain't nothing you need to be a worrying none about. Fact is, what I gotta take care of don't have nothing to do with you.
Kino walked over to the wall and took the key down from the hook. Stepping up to the cell, he held the key up and smiled at Lucy.
This is the little lady I'll be dealing with. Tell me, Lucy, do you remember when you wouldn't dance with me at the dance?
Lucy didn't respond.
Oh, I'm sure you remember. I asked you just real nice to dance with me, but being as you were the daughter of a rich rancher and me being only a cowboy, you wouldn't have nothing to do with me.
You aren't a cowboy. Cowboys are honorable men. You're nothing but an outlaw. And I believe I told you that I didn't want to dance with you because I don't like you.
Uh-huh. Well, here's the thing, girlie. You're going to dance with me now. Only it ain't exactly going to be dancing if you get my meaning. Yes, ma'am. Me and you is going to have us some fun.
Does Van Arnt know you're here?
It ain't none of your concern whether Van Arnt knows I'm here or not. What I want you to do is stand over there up against them bars. If I see you so much as move one inch, I'll kill this girl and have my fun with you.
Obeying Kino's instructions, Sally stepped up against the bars right alongside the open cell door.
That's more like it.
When Lucy saw Kino coming toward her, her fear became palpable, and she felt bile in her throat.
No, please, don't! Van Art said I was for insurance!
Hell, honey, he just said that because he wanted first crack at you himself, that's all. Only thing is, I figure on taking my turn with you before anyone else.
No, no, please, no!
Lucy squeezed her eyes shut, trying unsuccessfully to prevent the tears from sliding down her cheeks. Her entreaties fell upon deaf ears, however, for she felt him approaching, then smelled his foul breath and body stench as he reached for her.
Go ahead and cry if you want to, girlie. I like it when you cry.
Behind Kino's back, Sally tore off a piece of cloth from her dress, then stuffed it into the lock plate of the cell door opening.
Step outside.
Turning his head, he saw Sally standing very still by the bars.
Well, aren't you being a good girl now?
Lucy stepped through the open door. Kino closed the cell door, turned the key in the lock, then hung the key back on the wall hook.
I tell you what, Sally, you can watch us. Maybe you learn a trick or two you can teach Smoke. Bend over that desk, girl. Me and you is gonna have us a fine time.
Lucy hesitated.
Damn you, I told you to lean over.
Oh!
Kino pushed her belly down over the desk, then hiked her dress up over her waist.
Yes, sir. This is gonna be fine.
Behind Kino, and unnoticed by him, Sally took a pin from her hair and stuck it in between the door lock and the lock plate. As she had hoped, the cloth she had stuffed into the lock plate had prevented the bolt from seating. She was able to push it back with her hairpin. Then slowly she opened the door. Kino, who had been holding his pistol up to this point, now put it down on the desk so he could free both hands. He started to unbuckle his belt. Sally stepped out of the cell and, walking very quietly, moved up behind him. She reached out and picked up his pistol, then, holding it by the barrel, brought the pistol butt down hard on the back of Kino's head.
No!
Lucy, stand up. You're all right. He didn't get a chance to do anything. Stand up and help me get him into the cell.
Sally, how did you...
No time to explain. Grab hold.
With one on each leg, the two women dragged Kino across the floor and into the cell. Then, using the same hairpin, Sally removed the cloth she had used to jam up the lock plate. Closing the cell door, she locked it, then handed the key to Lucy.
Hang on to that. We'll take the keys with us. There's no sense in making it easy for them to let him out.
Oh, they probably have another key.
You're right.
Sally jerked open the middle drawer of the desk, then smiled and picked up a key.
Here it is. Let's go.
Where are we going?
The same way we came. I'm sure Smoke has been following us. He can't be too far behind. We'll catch up with him. Then we'll be safe.
Lucy started toward the front door.
No, not that way. We might be seen leaving. We'll go out the back.
When the two went outside, Lucy turned up her nose.
Oh, God, what is that awful smell?
Looking around, Sally saw an outhouse just across the alley.
Give me the keys.
Taking the keys from Lucy, Sally opened the door to the outhouse, then dropped them down into the hole. When she turned back, she saw a huge smile spread across Lucy's face.
That's the first time I've seen you smile since we left. It's good to see it.
There hasn't really been anything to smile about until now, but I have to admit, dropping the keys down there is funny.
Come on. Our horses are in the stable back here.
How do you know?
I was looking through the back window when I saw them put away.
You just put your finger on the biggest difference between us, Sally. Here I was, crying and feeling sorry for myself, while all along you were figuring ways for us to escape. I saw you pick the piece of material out from the lock. You put that in there, didn't you? That was how you were able to get out of the cell once he locked you in.
Yes. Here they are. Can you saddle your own horse?
I know I haven't made a very good impression so far, but I'm not totally hopeless. Yes, I can saddle my own horse.
Then let's do it and get out of here.
The two women worked quickly and quietly, their efforts illuminated only by the moon that splashed a pool of silver light in through the large stable window. When both horses were saddled, Sally held her finger across her lips to suggest quiet. Then she led her horse out into the alley. Lucy followed until they reached the end of the alley. Then they mounted their horses and rode off into the dark.
What the hell are you doing in a jail cell?
I came back to check on the women. Somehow they'd gotten out of the cell as soon as I stepped in through the door. One of them hit me from behind.
Are you telling me a couple of women managed to escape from my jail?
Yeah.
That's impossible. And all the time I've been here, not one person has ever got out of that cell. Not one. And now you're telling me that a couple of women escaped?
Well, it ain't my fault. If you want to blame someone, blame your deputy there. Like as not, he didn't even lock the cell door shut.
Oh, you know better than that, Kino. You saw me lock that door. And you even tried to open it yourself.
That's right. I did try to open it. It was locked.
Well, don't matter none whether he'd locked the door or not. The thing is, the women got out and now they're gone.
What I want to know is, what were you doing back here in the first place?
I told you I come back here so I could check up on them.
Nobody asked you to check on them.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing I did check up on them, ain't it? Because it turns out they was getting away.
What do you mean they was getting away? They did get away, you dumb son of a bitch, and you did nothing to stop them.
You got no right to talk to me like that, Van Art. And anyhow, how could I stop them when they hit me from behind as soon as I come into the room?
If you ask me, old Kino just come back here so he could get himself a poke. I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't the one that opened the cell door to let them out in the first place.
Then what happened, Kino?
Get me out of here.
I'll leave you in there till you rot.
Uh-uh. I don't want that son of a bitch lying around in my jail. Get him out, deputy.
The deputy started toward the key, but seeing the hook empty, he turned back to Kino.
Where's the key?
They took it with them.
No problem. There's another one in the middle desk drawer.
No, there ain't.
What do you mean?
They took that key, too. They took both of the keys with them.
Really? Well, boy, looks to me like you're in a lot of trouble here. Without a key, I don't know how we're going to get you out.
Well, you better figure out a way if you want me to tell you where they went.
The hell with you. I'll find it without you.
Van Art, don't you leave me in here.
I can get him out.
How?
Fred Loomis is the locksmith who put the lock in. He always keeps a master key so he can make a spare set for such things as this.
All right, go get him.
Jerry, go down to Fred Loomis's house. He's probably in bed by now, but wake him up. Tell him there's an emergency down at the jail. Then I want you to round up Miller, Coleman, Billings, Deacus, and Agnew. Tell them I want them in a special posse.
Marshal, I know it ain't my place to say nothing, you being Marshal and me just being a deputy and all, but there ain't a one of them boys you just named that is worth the gunpowder it would take to blow them to Kingdom Come. Are you sure that they're the ones you want for your posse?
You're right, Jerry. It ain't your place to say nothing. Now you go get Loomis and round them men up like I told you to.
All right, Marshal, if you say so.
What the hell happened to your face, boy?
Nothing.
Jess's wife stuck a hot stove lid into the face. Yes, sir, she burned him good.
Son of a bitch. Does it hurt?
Hell yes, it hurts. You got any more questions?
You sure you want to go chasing off after her? I mean, it looks to me like every time you and that woman tangle, you come up on the short end of the stick.
I'm sure. It was about 15 minutes after Jerry Laney left before the locksmith showed up.
Loomis, thanks for coming.
What took you so damn long? I want out of here now. You hear me? Get me out of here now.
I take it this fella isn't supposed to be in here.
Hell no, I ain't supposed to be in here.
Well, hold your horses. I'll get you out as quick as I can.
It's already too late for quick. Should have been here a half hour ago.
You're a little feisty, ain't you, sonny?
Then, seeing Kino's red, puffy face, he squinted.
What the hell happened to your face? Did I say something funny?
I've heard about enough about my face. It ain't none of your business what happened to my face. Just get to work and do whatever you have to do. Get me out of here.
Marshal, I had to make a new key. I guess you know that's going to cost this city a quarter.
A quarter? I thought it only cost 15 cents to make a key.
Well, that's in the daytime during normal business hours. Your deputy got me out of bed, so it's going to cost you extra.
Send the city a bill.
Yeah, I thought you might say something like that. All right, let me see what I can do here.
Loomis walked over to the cell, inserted the key, and tried to turn it. It wouldn't turn.
What's wrong? Son of a bitch, you are a locksmith. Can't you even make a key that works?
Hold your horses, sonny. Hold your horses.
Removing the key, he filed on one of the tangs for a moment, then reinserted it. And when it still didn't work, withdrew it and filed on it again. It took him a full 5 minutes before the key worked. As the locksmith was leaving, two men came in.
Miller, Coleman, I'm glad you could come.
The deputy said you wanted us to join a posse?
That's right.
All I can say is it must be one hell of a posse if you want me and Coleman.
Not just you and Coleman. I want Billings, Deacus, and Agnew, too.
What the hell is up, Marshal? Me and Coleman ain't exactly the posse kind. And them other boys you just named are even less so. What makes you think we would be interested?
You came down here, didn't you?
Curiosity got us down here, Marshal. But that ain't enough to get us to join no posse.
Huh. What if I told you there's $50 to each man who's willing to ride with me?
$50? Just for riding in a posse? Are you serious?
I am very serious.
Who do we have to kill for $50?
Smoke Jensen.
That ain't funny.
I didn't intend it as a joke.
Smoke Jensen ain't someone to mess with.
There'll be 10 of us.
10 of us?
Like you said, Smoke Jensen ain't someone you want to mess with. But I figure if there's 10 of us, we can handle it all right.
That $50, it'll be for all of us, right? I mean, you ain't saying you're going to give $50 just to the one who does the actual killing, are you?
It's for all of you, no matter who does the killing.
As long as we kill the son of a bitch.
Miller and Coleman looked over at Van Arnt.
Who's this pasty-faced feller?
He's the one who's going to pay the $50 once we kill Smoke Jensen. You got a problem with that?
No, I ain't got a problem with it. If the others go along with it, I'm willing to go too.
Well, Van Arnt, wait a minute. We killed Smoke Jensen. How are we ever going to get the money?
What money?
Billings, Deacus, and Agnew came in at that moment.
$50 apiece if you ride with my special posse.
That ain't...
Harlan, why don't you take your posse outside and tell them what's going on?
Good idea. How about you boys step outside with me and I'll tell you everything you need to know.
Van Arnt waited until Craig and the posse were outside. Then he looked over at Kino.
You're going to need to learn how to keep your mouth shut. As far as those men are concerned, $50 is all the money there is. Unless you want to start sharing.
Sharing what? How are we going to get the ransom if we kill Smoke Jensen?
You said you know Jensen's ranch. How well do you know it?
I've rode all over it. Hell, I know it like the back of my hand.
If Jensen and his wife are both dead, along with them two that ride with him all the time, there ain't going to be anybody left to look after the ranch. Do you think you could show us the best way to cut out about 5,000 head and get them off the ranch before anyone notices?
Hell yes, I know exactly how to do it. We can ford them, cross Elk Creek, then take them up the other side of Red Butte. But what would we do with them once we had them? C.D. Montgomery and Redcliffe are the only cattle buyers around.
They're paying $25 a head up in Wyoming at the railhead in Harney. We're going to drive the herd up there.
$25 a head for 5,000 head? That's...
$125,000. A hell of a lot of money and more certain than collecting a ransom from Jensen, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
What about them other boys, the ones the marshal's talking to now? What do they get out of all this?
You heard my brother. They're getting $50 apiece for riding in a posse.
They going to be satisfied with that?
Yeah, because they ain't going to know about anything else unless one of you starts running off of the mouth.
I ain't going to say nothing.
Where do you reckon Jensen is right now?
It doesn't matter where he is now. He has to come through Ptarmigan Pass to get here, and that's where we'll be waiting for him.
After Deputy Laney rounded up the posse, he returned to the jail. He was just outside the window when he overheard Van Arnt telling the others of his plan to kill Jensen and the others. Not wanting any part of that, he went back to the stable, saddled his horse, and rode out of town at a gallop. Seeing the two women in front of him, he circled around a butte and waited for them. When they approached the end of the butte, Laney rode out in front of them.
Sally!
Laney jumped down quickly and went to her.
Get away from her!
Looking up, Laney saw that Sally was holding a pistol and it was pointed at him.
Now that would be Kino's gun, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Well, you can put that down, Mrs. Jensen. I'm on your side.
You know who I am?
I do now, yes. That's why I'm here. And like I said, I am on your side.
Why should I believe that?
Well, I don't reckon you have any reason to believe it. Especially given the way I acted back there, but once I found out you were telling the truth, and once I found out what their plans were, well, I figured I just couldn't stand by and watch it happen.
You don't have to worry about it now. There won't be any ransom paid.
That's not the plan. And to be honest, I don't think it ever was a plan.
What are you talking about? Of course it was the plan.
No, the plan is to hold you two as bait. And then when your husband comes after you, they're gonna kill him, and anyone who was with him. They also plan to kill you, Mrs. Jensen. Now, after that, they're going to cut away about 5,000 head of cattle from your herd. And before anyone realizes what's going on, they'll drive them up to Wyoming and sell them.
Huh. Do you expect us to believe that?
I do believe it.
What?
It's brilliant. It's incredibly evil, but it is brilliant.
Well, I assume you're heading back to join up with your husband now.
Yes.
If you would accept my help, I would be honored to ride with you until you join up with him.
I would be glad to have you accompany us, Deputy.
Cal saw them first, three riders coming out of the dark.
Riders coming?
It's Sally.
How do you know? You can't see from here.
It's Sally, and I assume Lucy, but I don't know who the third rider is.
One of the approaching riders broke from the other two and started galloping toward them. Smoke started toward the approaching rider. Hurley watched the two riders come together, then dismount and embrace and kiss.
If that's not Sally, it should be.
I think you're right.
Lucy and the other rider arrived at about the same time Pearlie and Cal did, and Pearlie helped Lucy down from the horse. Wrapping his arms around her, he pulled Lucy to him, and for a long moment, Pearlie and Lucy, like Smoke and Sally, enjoyed a kiss.
Don't none of you worry none about me. I'm just fine. Really.
Poor Cal. Feeling left out, are you?
Well, yeah. Seems like everyone has someone hugging them but me.
Well, let's see what we can do about that.
Reaching up toward him, she pulled him out of the saddle.
Whoa, what are you doing?
I'm giving you a hug.
Who's this?
This is the deputy marshal from Salcedo.
The name is Laney. Jerry Laney.
Have you come with another ransom demand?
No. It was never about ransom.
Laney explained to Smoke what he had overheard about using Sally as bait so they could kill them all.
There will be at least 10 of them.
10?
Yes, sir.
I appreciate the information, deputy. And I appreciate you helping Sally and Lucy escape.
Well, I wish I could take credit for that, but somehow, your wife managed to do that all by herself.
Oh, you should have seen her, Mr. Jensen. She poked some cloth into the jail cell door, then managed to get it open. Your wife is wonderful.
You'll get no argument from me on that. Sally, why don't you take Lucy on home? We'll take care of Van Art.
I'm not leaving. Smoke, I watched that son of a bitch kill Carlos and Maria right in front of my eyes. I intend to be there when he pays the price.
All right. I know you better than to try and argue you out of something once your mind is made up. Pearlie, looks like you're going to have to take Lucy home.
Smoke,
If you trust me to do it, I'll take her home. I couldn't stand by and let you folks be murdered, but this ain't my fight, so I don't intend to take part in it.
You don't have to take part in it. Like I said, I appreciate you bringing us word. Lucy, why don't you go along with the deputy?
I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here with the rest of you.
No, I don't think so, Lucy. Smoke is right. You need to get out of here.
No!
Miss, if it's because you don't trust me, I can understand that, but I swear to you, I mean only to help.
It isn't that.
Well, then what is it?
Pearlie, would you want to be married to someone who is such a coward that she would run out on her friends?
What? What did you say?
They're my friends, aren't they? Sally, Smoke, and Cal? Would you really want me to run out on them?
Well, no, I'm not talking about that part. I'm talking about the married part.
Well, would you want to marry such a person?
Are you saying you would marry me?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been asked yet.
Oh, yes, I hadn't planned on asking you in front of everybody like this, but, well, will you marry me?
I'll marry you on one condition.
What's that?
That you don't make me run out of my friends. After all, I have a personal bone to pick with him.
What should I do, Smoke?
Don't ask me. You saw how much success I had in telling Sally she couldn't stay.
Yeah, I saw that. All right, you can stay, but you do exactly as I tell you to do. Do you hear me? Exactly what I tell you to do.
Yes, dear.
Well, Deputy, it looks like we won't be needing you after all. I expect you better be getting on now, while the getting is good.
Oh, I expect you are right. I wish you folks good luck.
Thanks.
Behind Smoke, the horizon showed a thin line of gray. In half an hour, it would be light enough to see. During the night, they had heard the sounds of several horses and men, so they knew that Van Arnt and his men had arrived and were setting up an ambush. Now, by the gray light of early morning, they could see that Van Arnt, Craig, Kino, and at least 7 more men were in position in the rocks on each side of the pass. They would have been ideally situated to spring an ambush when Smoke came through, had Laney not warned Smoke of the possibility. But Smoke and the others were ready for Van Arnt. They were just inside the pass, in covered positions, ready to commence the operation when the time was right. Sally, who was also armed, was right beside Smoke. Looking to his left, he saw that Lucy, who was not armed, was with Pearlie, but well down behind the rocks so as to be out of any line of fire. Cal was just beyond Pearlie.
Coleman, Miller, you boys get over there. When they come through the pass, wait until I give the word, then start blasting away. I want Jensen and everyone with him killed.
He might have them 2 women with him. What do we do about them?
Did you hear what I said? I don't care who he has with him. I want them all killed.
Craig, you didn't say nothing about killing no women. That don't seem right to me.
Wouldn't extra $50 make it seem right to you?
An extra $50? Yeah, hell yeah. For an extra $50, I'd kill my own sister.
Hell, your sister don't count none. She's a whore.
Don't make no never mind. Whore or not, she's still my sister, and I'd still kill her for $50.
You people keep quiet and keep your eyes peeled.
Smoke saw Van Arndt come down to stand just at the edge of the little rocky ridge that marked the end of the pass. He stood there for a moment, staring in the direction from which he believed Smoke and the others would come. Quietly, Smoke jacked around into the chamber of his rifle, then drew a bead on Van Arndt's chest. He could drop him from this distance, and Van Arndt would never know what hit him. Smoke lowered his rifle.
Why didn't you shoot?
It's not a very sporting way to kill a man.
If you won't do it, I will. How sporting is it for a man to shoot a 9-year-old girl in the head from 1 foot away? Remember, I saw the son of a bitch do that very thing.
You're right.
Smoke raised his rifle again, and when he looked back, the target of opportunity was gone. Van Arndt had stepped back behind the saddle of rocks.
I'm sorry, but I promise you, he will not get out of here alive.
Bless Maria's little heart. I've been too furious with Van Arndt to even grieve properly. But I will grieve when all this is over. I have promised myself that.
Nearby, Cal tried to change positions, and when he did, he dislodged a rock and lost his footing.
What the hell was that?
Up there! There's someone trying to crawl up the side of the hill!
That's Cal! He's one of Jensen's men! Shoot him! Shoot the son of a bitch!
Cal managed to get back behind the rocks before any of them hit him. Although the position Smoke and the others had chosen had been well selected to engage Van Arndt's men if they'd entered the pass, it was not particularly well situated for what was happening now. Smoke's position had been detected. Whereas Van Arndt's men had a broad plain upon which they could maneuver, Smoke and the others had no such opportunity. As a result, the advantage fell quickly to Van Arndt.
Miller, move up on the left! Billings, you go up the right side! The rest of you boys, cover them! Keep firing!
Miller darted from one rock to another, thus moving closer. Billings moved up on the right side.
It was easy. Coleman, thank you, tag you. Come on up.
Smoke shouted to Pearlie and Cal.
Now!
Smoke, Sally, Pearlie, and Cal opened fire, and with the first broadside, Coleman, Deacus, and Agnew went down. Smoke began shooting at the rock where he saw Miller take cover. He knew he couldn't hit him from where he was, but he could get close enough to make Miller very uncomfortable.
Ah! Craig, get us out of here!
Stay where you are!
For the next few minutes, all was quiet. Then, somehow, Billings managed to improve his position so he could take a shot. His bullet came so close to Smoke that it kicked sand into his face. Smoke moved around to return fire, but it wasn't necessary, because Cal brought Billings down with one shot.
Harlan, how well do you know this pass?
I've come through it a lot of times.
You think we could get above them if we went up that way?
Yeah. Yeah, we could, but we'll need to keep someone down here to keep them busy.
I'll stay. Good enough, Boswell. Let's go.
Boswell watched the four of them leave. Then he started shooting up toward Jensen.
Hey, Miller! Miller, you still alive?
Yeah.
Then start shooting. I ain't doing this alone.
For the next few minutes, the shooting continued. Then Smoke saw someone raise up to improve his position, and when he did, Smoke snapped off a quick shot.
That one is Boswell.
At that moment, Miller stood up and raised his hands.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot no more! I give up!
Pearlie raised his rifle.
No, he wasn't one of them.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Get out of here then! Go on, get!
Miller turned to run.
Leave your rifle and drop your gun belt!
Miller did as ordered, then ran down the hill from where he had taken position and on out through the end of the pass.
Smoke, where are the others? Do you see them?
At that moment, Van Arndt, Craig, Jeter, and Kino stood up on a rock above and behind them. The four men were less than 100 feet away and had put themselves in perfect position to shoot Smoke and the others in the back. No doubt they would have done so had Sally not seen the barest flicker of a shadow and turned just as the four were raising their rifles.
Smoke, behind us!
Smoke, Pearlie, and Cal spun around even as the four men above them began shooting. Amazingly, Kino had not been hit, and he suddenly dropped his gun and threw up his hands.
No! No, 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 no! Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Kino! I hope you know this isn't buying you anything. We're taking you back to hang.
I didn't kill nobody. It was Van Arndt that done it.
I don't care whether you killed anyone or not. You're gonna hang. Come on down here.
I'm coming.
Kino started climbing down, then had to turn around and lean forward to grab onto a rock in order to be able to come down from a high ledge.
Is anyone left down there?
I don't think so.
As it happened, Lucy was the only one who saw the gun. When Kino reached down to improve his hold, the pistol Van Arnt had dropped was right there in front of him. Kino grabbed the pistol and spun around.
No!
Lucy jumped in front of Pearlie just as Kino fired. The bullet struck her in the chest.
No!
Pearlie's first shot hit Kino in the arm, causing him to drop his gun. Then Pearlie shot Kino in the other arm, then hit both knees. Pearlie shot off each of his ears, then pointed the pistol at Kino's face and fired, putting a hole right between Kino's eyes. Pearlie spun around then and dropped to the ground beside Lucy. With each breath Lucy drew, blood frothed at her mouth.
Lucy! Lucy, why did you jump out like that?
He would have killed you. I couldn't let him kill you.
Lucy! Oh, my God, Lucy!
I only wish that we could have been married.
You can be. Smoke, marry them.
I don't have a Bible. I don't have a book.
For God's sake, Smoke, just do it. You've been married twice now. You know what to say.
Lucy, do you want me to do this?
Yes, please. Please marry us.
All right, Pearlie. Do you take this woman, Lucy, to be your lawfully wedded wife, to love, hold, and honor as long as you both shall live?
I do.
Lucy, do you take Pearlie to be your lawfully wedded husband, to love, obey, and honor as long as you both shall live?
I do.
By the power vested in me by the state of Colorado, I pronounce you man and wife.
We're married, Pearlie. You're my husband.
Yes. And you were my wife.
Kiss me, Pearlie. Kiss me quickly.
Lucy!
Kiss her, Pearlie. Kiss her before it's too late.
Pearlie leaned over and kissed her, holding it for a long moment before, suddenly, he tensed, then raised up. He looked into Lucy's face, which, despite her death agony, wore an expression of rapture. The joy of her marriage was her last conscious thought, because Lucy was dead. When Pearlie looked up, tears were streaming down his face. Stepping over to him, Sally knelt beside him. One month later. As Pearlie tightened the cinches on his saddle, Sally came out to see him, carrying a cloth bag.
I baked a few things for you.
Oh, shucks. You didn't have to do that.
I know I didn't, but I wanted to.
I appreciate it.
Pearlie looked back toward the bunkhouse.
I thought Cal would come and tell me goodbye.
Cal is having a hard time with the fact that you're leaving. So am I. So is Smoke.
Yeah, truth is, I'm having a hard time leaving. It's just that, well, with what happened to Lucy and all, I need some time to myself alone. There's no knock on you and Smoke and Cal. Lord, there can't no man in the world have any better friends. It's just that, well...
I know what you mean, Pearlie. And I understand you need to get away. I just hope it isn't permanent.
Pearlie!
Pearlie turned toward his young friend and smiled broadly.
Well, I'm glad you came out to see me. I was beginning to think I might have to leave without saying goodbye.
I want you to have this.
Cal held out his silver hat band.
You can see that I have it all polished up for you. You have to keep it polished, otherwise it gets a little tarnished.
Oh, Cal, I can't take this.
I ain't giving to you permanent. I figure if I give you my silver hat band, you come back for sure.
Pearlie looked at the hat band for a moment, nodded, then slipped it onto his hat. Without another word, he swung into the saddle and rode off. Smoke came out of the house then and stood with Sally and Cal as they watched Pearlie pass under the entry gate.
You didn't try and talk him into staying?
No. I've been there, Sally. Pearlie has to make up his own mind as to whether or not he's coming back.
He's coming back.
How can you be so sure?
I gave him my silver hat band. Pearlie ain't no thief. He'll bring it back.
You know, you might just be right.
Damn, what was I thinking?
What do you mean?
Oh, I'm going to the dance tonight. Without that hat band, there ain't gonna be a girl one look at me. most especially without Pearly there to act up and get him all coming around us.
Cal, I've never told you this before, because I didn't want it to go to your head. But I think you are one of the best-looking young men I've ever known. You just keep that in mind at the dance. Why, I'll just bet the girls won't be able to stay away from you.
What? Wow, Miss Sally, are you serious?
I'm very serious.
Well, I'll be. Coming from you, that's something special. Seeing as you're about the prettiest woman there is.
Cal looked at his hat and turned it a few times in his hand before he put it back on.
Shoot, I don't need no silver hat band. No, sir, I don't need no silver hat band at all.
You laid it on a little thick, didn't you?
He needed a little cheering up.
Yeah, don't we all?
They stood there for a moment longer, looking at Pearly as he and his horse receded in the distance.
Do you think he'll be all right, Smoke?
Yeah. He'll be fine.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man number 36, Violence of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, James Lewis, Drew Copus, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, Tim Carlin, Alyssa Wilmoth, Johann Detweiler, Thomas Penny, David Coyne, Nick DePinto, Thomas Keegan, Bradley Smith, Alexander Strain, Joe Brack, Yasmin Toison, Eric Messner, Dylan Lynch, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, MJ Casey, Colleen Delaney, Stephen Carpenter, and Ken Jackson. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and Smoke Jensen theme music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Violence of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
I'm not in the mood for jokes, Creed. I'm just lucky you missed the booby traps.
Booby traps? Now you're scaring me. What, a tripwire? Explosives?
Explosives. Been there, done that. Got the t-shirt.
I was invited here.
By whom?
I'm gathering research for a television program. But I'm not the BBC, so chill.
Research on fairies, right? Go scamper about the woods, why don't you? And leave us to our work here.
And what exactly is that work? You've got something to hide. Is it two bodies?
Man holding a gun here. Why is it you're not afraid?
Afraid? A charging mountain lion would invoke my fear. Terrorists wielding C-14 makes me afraid. A thug with a gun? Been there, done that. Shredded the t-shirt.
Who the bloody hell are you? You're Starkers, you are!
You don't even know who you're following? I get to ask the questions. Who sent you?
I don't rightly know. I didn't get a name.
Liar.
I'm a feckin' freelancer. Watch the blade, will you, love? I think you killed me, partner.
He's not dead. He passed out from the pain. Pain, I promise you, if you don't start talking. Now, you'll have me believe you don't know the name of the guy signing your paycheck?
It's all cash now, isn't it?
What was the order?
To follow the American woman and make sure she gets out of town. Oh, get out of town, love.
You first.
I'm hot on their trail. There's something out there. I know I found them. But who or what are they? It's very close. Whatever it is. I feel like the temperature has dropped a few degrees. That's what happens when ghosts are around, right? Hell, I don't want to see a ghost. There are no ghosts. Chill, Kritz. It was a stupid bird. The owl. Oh! Oh! Oh. No! No, no! Help!
Help! Oh! 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 Oh!
God, I love a woman who can fight. Really turns me on.
Where is Eric?
You don't get to talk.
Miss Creed can keep her mouth shut.
Shut up! We're going for a ride, the three of us. I'm tired of you shadowing me, Slater. I should have done this days ago.
Don't hurt Eric. He's an innocent.
Like you are innocent of snooping and putting yourself in my way? You know too much about our operation, as does your friend.
He's just a kid. If you don't go to jail for arms dealing, then kidnapping and murder tend to alter a man's choice of Armani to Prison Orange.
I'll take that into consideration. See you around, Miss Creed. Mr. Slater?
Don't panic.
Hold your breath.
Rogue Angel 30, The Other Crowd.
Available now in graphic audio. Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Crow's
Jill Kismet.
Book 3,
Redemption Alley.
God damn it, Jill! What am I gonna tell Saul about this, god damn it? Where have you been? There's hellbreed all over your house!
Settle down, Theron. There's not much time. What we have here, ladies and gentlemen, is a situation.
Something's not right.
I popped the roof hatch. It wasn't just a nest. It was a full-blown nightmare. I leapt in, dropping straight into a pile of scurfs. There were so many of them. 50 at least. Drifts of them jammed into corners, wedged between boxes, waking to find death moving among them with fangs and fur, claws and lambent eyes. That was the first wrongness. There should not have been so many.
Someone's trying to kill her. Maybe more than one someone.
All of a sudden, it was burning. My heart was a lake of fire inside my chest.
Silver. This time they used silver.
We've got them by the balls now. Give me the gun.
Ready! Aim! Fire!
I did my best. He saw something. Something awful. I didn't get there in time.
Oh, Jesus. I should have seen it.
It was the night side.
Don't.
Don't blame myself. If you won't, I won't. Sleep well.
Available now in graphic audio.
In the beginning, the Lord created the earth. Then he rested. In time, the earth became cracked and scarred. And through those cracks rose darkness and shadow and unspeakable evil. The evil spread, and sickness and plague and war and death followed with it. Slowly, hope was lost and darkness threatened to overwhelm. But then, God sent his angels. The Holy Order of the Knights Templar, and at the head of the Legion, Knight Commander Cade Williams. And all the power of heaven followed with him.
Run. Run while you can. One day I will find you, and on that day, there will be a reckoning.
Prepare yourself for a reckoning in the Templar Chronicles, Book 1, The Heretic. Available now in graphic audio.
A reckoning indeed.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.